people, this is not a test. We are in DEFCON 5. Alpha Sector.
Check.
Tango Sector.
Check.
Delta Sector.
Only Sega Saturn has 3 32-bit processors.
Delta Sector.
3 processors mean better gameplay.
Delta Sector, you hear me?
Sony PlayStation only has one.
3, 2, 1.
When you've got Sega Saturn, nothing else matters.
Sega!
Welcome to the inaugural Sega Saturn New Year's Megacast, a collaborative effort between the Saturn Junkyard's Titancast and the Sega Saturn Shiro Podcast. My name's Samuel, the Southern Sega Gentleman, and I'll be your moderator for the evening. Seeing as we're spanning 8 time zones a day, how about we run down the list and tell all the fine folks out there who we are? And while we're at it, let's give them a little insight on our love for the Sega Saturn.
Hello there, I'm Simon. I'm the founder of the Saturn Junkyard blog, and my Saturn history goes back to 1996 when I bought my first Saturn. I had to argue with the guy in the store to sell me a Saturn. He wanted to sell me a PlayStation, but I was insistent because I was a Sega head at the time. I'd had my Mega Drive and I needed their new console. So I've had my Saturn since 1996, and I've had some times where I'm into it, sometimes where I'm not, but I've always had a love and it's always burning strong. I'm out.
All right, my name is Patrick. I do a lot of the modding stuff in the community for the Saturn. My favorite Saturn memory is when I never heard of it until I walked to a store in 2005 and I saw one. I was like, what the hell is this? And this clerk told me, oh yeah, the Sega Saturn for the Dreamcast. Like, what are you talking about? And then I slowly learned about the Saturn, and it was just really funny that I never heard of it. And I think that's still my favorite memory because it just shows sort of the issues with the marketing and the publicity about the system.
My name is Samuel, still the Southern Sega Gentleman. Hail from the great state of Louisiana. I know everybody loves it. Yeah, y'all love our food, et cetera, et cetera. Now, my favorite Saturn memory would have to be the very first day I actually got my Saturn. That was back all the way up in October of 1997. I was a late bloomer, but, you know, we didn't really have the money and all to kind of fit back into it and all. But I did have my Genesis, and whenever I was playing the Genesis, and every single time we go over to the, we had a Hollywood rental in town, and I'd see all the Saturn games on there. We had a little kiosk. I'd always take about 30 minutes to play the kiosk games. So whenever I finally got to pick up my Saturn, the game I picked up first was Resident Evil, and I've talked a lot about it on the Titancast side, and I absolutely loved the hell out of it. In fact, I didn't even get another game probably until 5 months later, and at that point, the Saturn was out the door, so I got to pick up a number of titles at a very large discount. But whenever it comes to my most favorite Saturn memory, it would have to be that day I got my Saturn. I got Resident Evil, I went home, and I spent the next 12 hours trying to kill the snake in the attic, and I did not realize you could just run away.
Oh, I can't top that. This is Dave, and I'm coming to you from San Diego, California. I am one of the hosts on the Shiro podcast, moderator over on Sega Saturn Collectors of America, and just a huge Sega Saturn fan lifetime. Like Simon mentioned, they tried so hard to get me to buy a PlayStation, but that, you know, that was my dad's console. It was kind of what he decided to go with, and I think my favorite Saturn memory was just how much mystique this console had for a 15 or 16 year old kid. And PlayStation was just prevalent. It was everywhere. You didn't have to look, you know, 2 feet to find a PlayStation game. But when I walk into an electronics boutique and see, you know, in the very, very back of the store, I'd see like one lone Saturn game. It was like a prize jewel. I saw this game, Enemy Zero, and this was right after the holiday. And it was, I don't know, it was like a $60 game. So like well outside of what I could afford it at the time. I didn't have that kind of pocket change, but I asked my uncle for it. And he bought it for my birthday. And I just played that game with my brother in the dark. And we just got so scared. And it was just such a great experience. And my dad, he'd even come in and he'd comment on like, what is this? What are you playing? Because, you know, he was so used to the PlayStation stuff. But honestly, that's what I loved about Saturn so much, is it just felt like it was our own little secret, you know?
I'm Nuno from Portugal, and I was the first guy to join Simon on the Saturn Junkyard. And I got the Saturn basically because at the time it was the famous console to get. This was right before the PlayStation started to get famous. And I don't have a single favorite memory, but I definitely have very fond memories of the first time I played it. And it was my first console, like, ever. So I have really fond memories of just playing so many games for the first time.
I'm Kay. I go by Murder of Crows. Coming from originally Aiea, Hawaii. I currently live in the Portland metro area. And my Saturn history kind of goes far and wide. I guess my favorite Saturn memory, recent memory, is being able to dump a bunch of unreleased games. That's kind of cool for me.
I'm Brian. I'm a virtuous schlub over on the Saturn Junkyard. I contribute in some capacity there, so that's fun. Anyway, I'm just up the street, actually, up in Seattle from K. And like Patrick, I got into the Saturn very late. In fact, it was about 2005 when I picked up an eBay bundle that had a bunch of games and controllers and arcade sticks and wheels and stuff, or one wheel. And that was, God, looking back on that now, that was like maybe $130 or something. And I got like Panzer Dragoon 1 and Zwei and Knights and Sega Rally and Virtua Fighter 2 and Virtua On and Die Hard Arcade and all these games with it. And I think that was just, a really fun memory because it was just jump-starting my collecting for the Saturn, and it was a really good crash course on all of the awesome and immediately appealing arcade style ports that Sega would really specialize in at the time. I haven't really looked back since.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, seeing how we have this nice little mega cast for everybody going about, we figured that we kind of talk about the Sega Saturn's past, its present, and its future. And in keeping with that, we've got a number of questions we're going to go over today, and every one of our hosts, we're all going to give our 2 cents on it. So with that being said, let's go ahead and get up into Sega Saturn's past. So in spite of poor marketing and a rushed launch, how, or why rather, did you decide to back the Saturn? And we'll start off again with Simon and run down the list.
Okay, guys. Well, basically for me, I was a Mega Drive user, not a big gamer at all. Not someone who knew about a large catalog of games, but someone who used to like to play sports games, driving games. One of the best games for me on the Mega Drive was golf. And so when I opted for the Saturn, it was to continue my love of golf and playing golf. As I say, when I went into the shop to speak to the guy, I didn't really have long before he started arguing with me and telling me that I should be buying a Sony PlayStation, that the Sega were finished and so on. But I argued and said, I really, really wanted a Saturn. And so I bought it, took it home. And during the 90s, I was a father and just starting out in a job. So I had 2 babies. I didn't have a lot of time to game. So for me, playing the Saturn sports games were king, things like golf, driving, maybe the odd fighting game. But I wasn't like a big RPG gamer or anything like that. So that's how I ended up with the Saturn. It was following the golf ball, and that was what it was.
Like I said before, I got into the Saturn fairly late. So a lot of the games that everybody played before and that whole new technology, new emerging technology feeling wore off. So playing games like Clockwork Knight, Mr. Bones, any of those other games that are sort of pseudo, like 3D and sort of sort of blasting graphics, really didn't appeal to me, and it just looked like it was old and dated. A lot of stuff in the U.S. market, not trying to slight the U.S. games, guys, but it just really didn't appeal to me. It just seemed really old and outdated, and like, why would I play that when I could play something on, Xbox for high quality? What really appealed to me, though, is a lot of the 2D stuff. Because in the U.S., while there wasn't a ton of 2D stuff, that Japan got a boatloads, especially in the shoot-'em-up category. And a lot of those games really appealed to me. A lot of the fighters and shoot-'em-ups. And while we didn't get them a lot here, we got a ton in Japan, and a lot of them are fairly affordable. So that's really what got me into it, and just the excitement and the lure of the system. It's like a new underground hipster thing where it's like, well, nobody knows about this old system. It's like just something that I really was into and nobody knew about. It's really had a really strong and tight-knit community. And I just kept picking up games and loved them. I mean, just recently I just picked up Gunbird for it, and I've just been having a blast trying to go through it. So there's never a dull moment, and I keep learning and figuring out new things about the system that I didn't know before. And there's just so many games, it's so exciting. And that's why it really appealed to me.
Yeah, as for me, you know, I grew up with the Genesis. You know, I picked up Genesis in 1995. And most of my friends, they were Nintendo guys. Most people in America were. So it always seemed like, you know, my friends were coming over to the house and they were playing the Genesis. And I always had a love affair with it because it was a much darker system. And how that relates to the Saturn is that whenever it came time to, you know, pick between the PlayStation and the Saturn, which that was the choice, you know, I had in 1997. You know, a lot of my friends had already picked up the PlayStation, excuse me. A lot of my friends had already picked up the PlayStation, and I had already, you know, dealt around with it and played with it and everything. And you know, I liked it and all, but whenever I got my hands on a Sega Saturn controller, and I spoke about it, you know, in a recent video in regards to the 3D controller, I absolutely loved it. I loved the 2D pad. I loved the 3D controller. It bonded with me. You know, the games that were there, even though, yes, some of them didn't have the best port from, say, the PlayStation, the games that were exclusive to the Sega Saturn, which were the games that were in that kiosk at Hollywood Video, I absolutely loved them, with the exception of Nights and the Dreams. I know everybody's going to hate me for that, but I just didn't understand that game. But I just felt like, the best way I can say it is, I felt drawn to it. I loved the console. I loved playing it. I loved getting involved with it. You know, it actually spoke to me more than the PlayStation did. So whenever it was all said and done, that was my primary reason for going with it. And, you know, looking back, I'm really not sad I did either, because I didn't really miss out on anything, in my opinion, with the PlayStation. As far as I'm concerned, the Saturn had a lot better exclusivity.
Cool. You know, everybody likes an underdog, I think. I mean, I'm a Padres fan, and they've never won a World Series. So, you know, I think that's just part of my personality, is I went for a console that was hard to obtain, hard to, it just had to be sought out. It was just something that, it wasn't spoon-fed to you. It was, you kind of had to seek out the Saturn. You had to want to be a Saturn fan. Because all of my friends had a PlayStation or a Nintendo 64. So I kind of was the odd man out, but I like that. You know, it was that independent personality of mine that I just wanted to have something different, you know, and I shared it with my brother and we just had so much fun. I think that first game that I was really seeking that drew me to the Saturn was Daytona USA. I saw it in the arcade. I was blown away. I really had to have Daytona USA. And when I went to a game store and described it to the clerk, he knew what game I was talking about, and he literally told me, well, that's on a system you don't really want, you know, let me show you Ridge Racer, you know, on the PlayStation, and really tried to sell me a PlayStation hard. But you know, I just left that day and I just decided that I was going to seek out this console. And then at the store, standing in the queue for Mario 64, I saw Nights into Dreams on a tiny little CRT behind the glass, and it just blew me away just looking at that game in motion. It was just the demo, you know, and I was watching Knights fly through the hoops, and I just said, this is just amazing. It just blew my mind, and I left that line. I left that queue in the store and forgot all about Mario 64, and I've never turned back since.
So it might seem weird to say this nowadays, but at the time when I got my Saturn, which was in for Christmas of 1996, the Saturn really was the popular console to get. Like, the PlayStation eventually kind of won the console wars. It got much more popular than the Saturn would ever get. But in 96, the Saturn really was the console to get in Portugal, because Sega was really huge. I mean, everyone had a Mega Drive. A lot of people had Master Systems, and Saturn was the next big thing. We never got the whole controversy about the Mega CD and 32X. It was just the good old standard Mega Drive, which had an awesome reputation, and the Saturn was the console to get. And so it really wasn't so much of a conscious choice, decision by me. It was just, I went with the flow of the times, and I was really aware of it because at the time there was a TV show about video games and they talked the Saturn just constantly. So I was really very much aware of the brand, of the console, and it was a good decision.
Well, I mentioned this on our first Shirocast way back when now. I actually was not really a fan of the Saturn to start. It was way too expensive. But in Hawaii, being a stopping point between, you know, the U.S. and Japan, we actually had a lot of import shops. And so I had a lot of access to import games. And a buddy of mine who worked over at Blockbuster let me know that they were getting rid of all their Saturn stuff. And I remember another buddy of mine who went headfirst for Saturn getting Virtual On. And I really loved that game in the arcade. So I decided, you know what, I'll go ahead and grab Virtual On. I'll grab this $30 Saturn with a PlayStation Blockbuster case. And I grabbed that. And at the time, I was really into my Super Nintendo and some import games, one of which was Fire Pro Wrestling. So I found out that the Saturn had a version of Fire Pro Wrestling for import, a six-man scramble. And I imported that. I picked up Virtual On. I grabbed some twin sticks, and I really never looked back.
You know, I actually got into the Saturn, or what sparked my interest was actually the Dreamcast. As I mentioned, I was kind of a latecomer to the Saturn. I was about 10 years late on that. But I was there for launch day, $99.99, with the Dreamcast. And I love that system so much. You know, the Sega just seemed like they pushed such an innovative, devil-may-care attitude. And I loved all the creative boundaries that Sega emphasized during its short lifespan. And the Dreamcast always had plenty of bizarre and unique games with the seemingly endless capacity to surprise. And I just never felt that dynamic with any other console at the time or after that. And I think maybe that's with good reason, since manufacturers, you know, they tend to want to stay solvent with their consoles to be able to keep producing software and hardware. So they're not going to take a lot of those risks with a Seaman or a Shenmue or anything like that. But in reflecting on those innovative and creative qualities that I like so much about the Dreamcast, as well as its unapologetic, you know, arcade sensibilities and its status as an underdog, I got to thinking that perhaps owning a Saturn might yield a similar appeal. I looked towards that and saw its vibrant lineup of Sega arcade classics, and also being a Sega or a Sonic fan as a kid, Knights also kind of put that over the top. So eventually I just had to buy a Saturn.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you that it had that allure. I think it probably would be more, the Saturn would be more successful if it had that Dreamcast feel to it and were just at the right place at the right time, but I mean, things just didn't line up, you know?
Yeah.
All right, gents. So what was it like being a Saturn fan during the 3 to 4 years that it was on the market?
Okay, well, I'm going to chip in there. My memory is a tiny bit hazy of that time, but I do remember that Saturn was always second fiddle to the PlayStation. So I did say already that I wasn't much of a gamer. The games that I got outside of sports games, so I had Sega Rally and Virtua Fighter at launch with the console that got bundled with the console. I had my Golf, Actual Golf, I think it was. So I was playing those games a lot. The games that I actually bought were dictated by the scarcity of Saturn stuff on the shelves. I think someone's already talked about, I think maybe it was Dave, talked about the joy of finding an obscure Saturn title for sale in the shops. Well, for me, it wasn't the obscure titles, it was just whatever was there. So I ended up with Clockwork Knight, was one of the games that I ended up with, and Panzer Dragoon. Not because I had any desire to get hold of those games or because I'd heard about those games, it was simply they were the only ones available. I remember being able to get the official Sega Saturn magazine for a couple of years, and I used to buy that regularly because you got a disc with every episode. And but you know, there wasn't a glut of games in the shops. There wasn't a bunch of people talking about the games. It was very much a, in my memory, a second fiddle console to the Sony PlayStation. And in fact, my children were very unhappy at, I think, about six and four. They already knew that a Saturn was not what they wanted, and so we ended up getting a Sony PlayStation for the kids because they didn't want a game on a Saturn, and that's aged at about six or four. They knew that it wasn't a cool console, so that's me done.
So I can't speak as a Saturn fan, but I can speak as a Sega fan. As a kid growing up in the 90s, I watched a boatload of cartoons, talked on the playground, and I never heard of the system once, and any advertising on any TV shows, anything, and Dave could probably attest to this on the West Coast, but the East Coast in Jersey, there was like nothing. It was barren, there was nothing, and I actually talked to my parents about it and asked them, well, I was a big fan of Sega, why didn't, you know, get me Saturn? And they never knew about it. They didn't know anything about it. I guess a lot of the stores we went to, they didn't have them on the shelves through that whole the whole Saturn push that they did in the with the Saturn E3 release. But there was just nothing. I mean, and I know because I used to watch the cartoons, and I got like Nintendo 64, and I saw the PlayStation and talked to the kids about it, but I've never heard of once about it. And I didn't learn about it till years later, so it still baffles me to this day how Sega could have messed up that bad with the marketing. And really, I think I would have liked the Saturn if I knew more about it and there was more games to play on it. And Dave, would you be able to chime in about your West Coast experience?
Yeah, I have no memories of the original launch. In fact, I missed the launch. I was telling Nuno the other day, we were just bombarded in 93 and 94 with all of these Me Too consoles that were coming out. The beginning wave, like the XI, the CDX, the Multimega, you know, just the 3DO. So many consoles I would see in these magazines, and they were all unattainable to a kid with my allowance. So I just kind of became desensitized to it, and I was just like, I'm going to stick with my SNES, and I'm just going to, you know, keep my head down. And I missed the Saturn when it launched, you know. And then later on, when I found out about it, about the time that Knights was coming out, and that's when I really latched onto it, you know, my experience would always be, you know, getting made fun of or you know, being derided just because I was looking for a certain game or something like that. But I felt like you were almost pushed towards Sony. And I'm just wondering if Sony had like a, I don't know, if they gave stores kickbacks for selling their product, you know, because that's how it felt like to me.
You know, kind of to address what you were talking about, you know, down here in the South, yeah, we had the Sega ads. I remember the Saturn ads on the TV. I remember in the magazines and everything. And like I said, I never picked up mine until 1997. But I will say this, and it kind of goes back to the history. Sega kind of screwed over whenever they did the E3 launch. And there was a number of retailers who just did not want their product on the shelf. And I can tell you right now that a number of retailers, I can't remember the very first time. I mean, granted, we had very few places to buy Saturn at, but like, say, Walmart, I didn't see the first Saturn game on the shelf at a Walmart until probably 1996. So it just seemed like there wasn't an availability per se. Granted, like I said, we didn't really have the biggest outlet. I mean, yeah, if I went 40, 50 miles away to a city or something, I might have seen something. But other than that, it really wasn't the case. And, you know, since I got into it so late, and most of y'all can probably attest to this, whenever we got to the end of the lifespan and we knew the Dreamcast was coming, the games were absolutely cheap as anything. I mean, I can still remember Saturn games in the shelf, and it was, I'd say 1999, almost 2000. They were still there, immaculate. And they cost $15, $20. And that's really whenever my collecting really started, was whenever I could do the $10, $15 games like Panzer Dragoon and all that. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, for the Sega Saturn collectors, it was a lot better to wait until the tail end of it. So, you know, it's kind of, it's kind of hard pressed to say whether we actually had people that were kind of being bought out by Sony or people that were getting paid off or whatever the case is. But I can tell you right now, it really seemed like the Sega brand was completely dead, at least until the release in the, of the Dreamcast.
Over here, I really doubt that there was any kind of politics behind the scenes. I think it was just really the market forces at work. But it was really hard being a Saturn fan at the time. Because as I said, in the beginning, it was just so popular. I mean, there was no way that you could have predicted at the time that the Saturn would ever lose the fight against the PlayStation, which was the newcomer, which had everything to prove and no history, no fame. And seeing the Saturn slowly get behind the PlayStation in sales and in games, people would start to talk more and more about PlayStation. That TV show that I mentioned would give more and more time to the PlayStation, and at some point they basically stopped talking about the Saturn at all. If you went to a store, you saw more and more shelf space dedicated to the PlayStation and fewer Saturn games. And at some point, the games just stopped. And if you had started certain series in the Sega Saturn, for example, Tomb Raider, and then you saw the sequels to that first game on the PlayStation, but not on the Saturn, it was really, really hard all around. At the time, I think we were justified in thinking that we had just bet on the wrong horse.
I kind of got into the Saturn late during its run. It had already been failing in the U.S. at the point where I got it. So I wasn't subjected to any of the real advertisements that came on there. I did see like the 3-pack that came out and the push for that. I saw the price drop when the PlayStation was just completely demolishing it in sales. The main thing that I had going for me during the time when it was actually released was the fact that there were so many good import games, and I was already used to purchasing imports. Playing the imports were kind of a little bit of a difficulty at that point. You know, the Action Replay was available, but it was $60 at the time. Like it's already been mentioned, when I finally started becoming a fan of the system itself, people would laugh at you, basically. You know, my high school classmates would kind of go, "What are you playing that thing for?" But the import scene was really where the games were at, and that's the only way I could convince anyone to play on the Saturn.
And actually, I had some friends in high school, you know, the very few of them who were actually Saturn fans. I mean, that's what they would swear by. It's like, it's a system that's worth owning when you look, you know, to all of the Capcom fighting games and pretty much everything that was released in Japan that we didn't get over here. And so it's just a whole world that was kind of shut off by to the layman who, you know, had no idea that stuff existed. And I think there were a lot of factors at the time that contributed to, you know, Sony, their dominance. I mean, I don't know how hard they actually had to try after they set, you know, a lower $299 price point. You know, the console was a lot easier to develop for and ended up with more developer support and greater breadth of games in its library. And, you know, it just reached a new generation of people that had never really considered owning a games console before. And so there was, you know, a big reset button there that, you know, it didn't really matter if they were already predisposed to Sega or Nintendo or whatever, that they were just kind of, you know, learning about games for the first time. And they saw, you know, PlayStation just dominating the store shelves more or less. And during that generation, even though I didn't own a Saturn, I was always keeping pretty close tabs on what all of the players were doing. And I was intrigued at the time by what the Saturn was had to offer. And, you know, Sega's marketing did reach me, but, you know, mostly via gaming magazines and just walking into stores and seeing some of the bundles like the Virtua Cop, the Virtua Fighter, Daytona USA console bundle. as well as, you know, nights during that Christmas 96 season. You know, those games really did catch my attention. But unfortunately, by the time I did get a console of that generation, it was 2 years later in Christmas of 98. And the Saturn was pretty much dead by then, and my parents ended up finding me a Nintendo 64 instead. And by that point, I had already set my sights on the Dreamcast, more or less, which I would eventually buy on launch day.
All right, so, you know, everybody likes to talk about how Bernie Stolar and Sega of America completely ruined the Sega Saturn and the Sega brand. But we all know that there was more to play in that. So with that being said, what do y'all think Sega could have possibly done differently in regards to the Saturn?
I guess what they could have done differently was made their system easier to code for, because as well as various fallings out with EA, the Saturn stopped getting some of the big releases that the PlayStation were getting. And I think that was its biggest mistake for me, was that it couldn't compete with the PlayStation in the games that were coming out. If it had had all of the releases that my children had wanted, I would never have bought one, never have bought a PlayStation. We could have just carried on the Saturn, but the games weren't coming out for the Saturn. The kids wanted a PlayStation, and that's the way it went.
With the with Sega, I think they need to start way back by, in my opinion, I think they should have just cut the 32X. And just went with the Saturn instead, because I mean that would have got people, okay, well we have the Sega CD and that's great, but we have the Saturn to look forward to, and they wouldn't have had people like dissuaded by, okay, well they have 32X, is the Saturn another 32X. I think they should have had better market focus to begin with, maybe spruce up their marketing campaign to try to reflect sort of what Sony and Nintendo were doing at the time. Follow through with the original launch date, which I think is what killed it, which killed a lot of the retailers and burnt bridges. I think they would just follow through, had a good stock, had the games out, I think they would have had a good, nice push. And then try to push more RPGs when Final Fantasy VII succeeded, as everyone was sort of got that, and I think if they pushed more out and sort of had people like hook, line, and sinker with that, I think they would have gotten a lot of good sales from that. A lot of people blame Bernie, but I think, to be honest, Bernie was doing damage control at that point. And it's sort of evident by the successful and great launch the Dreamcast had when it first pushed out. Bernie learned the mistakes from Tom and just pushed out the Dreamcast. And, I mean, everyone knew about that sold bundles. And the only reason really why it died is just the PS2 sort of colossus stranglehold they had in that market they got from the PlayStation.
Amen to that. That was really eloquent, Pat. And I could not agree more with Pat on the 32X just being kind of an unnecessary stopgap. I know that they cut their teeth on that architecture, the dual processor architecture. And I love the Saturn's architecture, don't get me wrong. But I think that, you know, Tom Kalinske spent Sega of America into a deficit. Sega of Japan did not like that. It didn't play to their conservative, you know, kind of the way that Japanese business is very conservative, and they like to have, you know, money in reserve. And so I think that they kind of put Kalinske on a short lease, and I wish they hadn't. You know, I wish they had given him more freedom, because I do have a lot of admiration for him as a CEO. I think that they shouldn't have dumped so much marketing money on that kind of attitude marketing that was just so out of date. We weren't naive anymore as consumers, and it just didn't play well with us. You know, we could see right through it. We wanted to see good gameplay. You know, we didn't want to just see, them blow $25 million on a marketing campaign that completely fell dead. I wish that they would have localized the UK magazine in the United States so that there was some place for us to get news back in the day when we didn't have the internet, or at least wasn't readily available. And, you know, I just wish that, I wish that they would have seen ahead of time the importance of 3D. I'm so glad that the Saturn is a capable 2D machine, but I wish they would have been able to have some foresight to be able to see the importance of 3D, so that they would have worked on the development kits ahead of time. They would have worked on the architecture and the development kits ahead of time to give developers a real solid, firm footing out the door.
Yeah, I kind of have to echo what both y'all said. Sega did a completely, and you know, this is something I need to chime in on, is that everybody likes to blame Bernie Stolar, but at the end of the day, Sega of America and Sega of Europe were completely subservient to the will and wishes of Sega of Japan. Now, if Sega Japan didn't like the idea, then it was just dead on the water. And there's no way around that. So whenever it came to Sega of America dumping as much money as they did, they were trying to jump the gun because, you know, the Saturn had come out in Japan already. So you have the drop in Japan and you have the PlayStation coming out. Sega of America had already seen, Sega of Japan too, had already seen just how well the PlayStation was doing. So that jump that they did at the first E3 was completely and totally, from a business standpoint, it might have made sense at that moment, but what happened after the fact, the fallout was insane. Like I talked about earlier, you had multiple retailers who would not even put their product on the shelves. They killed their market. People were sitting there like, okay, so I can drop 300, 400 bones on a Saturn right now, and there might be a couple of games for it. I don't know what's going on. I've been trying. What happened to Saturn Day? I mean, the whole thing was the debacle into itself, and that could be a whole episode unto itself. But it wasn't just the launch, it was the follow through, because the titles that we had, the branding that we had, was so destroyed already that by the time I had picked it up in 97, most people were laughing at Saturn. I mean, we're laughing at the Saturn. They were laughing at Sega. They just could not deal with it. You know, and the PlayStation was blowing the market up. And then on top of that, you had just the death of it coming in. It's just the Dreamcast, it just, I don't think in any possible way you could have had the Saturn work with the lineup they had following it, or the lineup they had preceding it. So I'm going to have to echo Pat's point. The 32X just completely destroyed things in a lot of ways. The Sega CD did as well. So that's my two cents.
Well, I think we should always keep in mind that every market was its own thing. Of course, they all affected each other, but there's a reason why the Saturn was still moderately successful in Japan. And though he still ended up losing to the PlayStation in sheer number of sales. But in the US, from what I know, what I've read about it, it was just a complete disaster. And as you guys have talked about. So speaking about how things were in Europe, or at least in my country in specific, I really don't think it was a marketing problem or a matter of damaging the brand recognition or the brand image. I think it was, this is just my opinion, of course. But I think it was, the biggest problem was really the hardware, how hard it was to program for. I mean, of course, we all know that there were skilled programmers who managed to pull off some amazing games. But we can't deny that it was, I'm not a programmer myself, but from what I've read about it, it was a really hard system to program for, with the dual CPUs and not being made from the ground up for 3D. So I think that really hurt in comparison to the PlayStation. And I think developers at some point really decided to jump ship and to program exclusively for the PlayStation. So I think that if from the very beginning, if the Saturn had been made differently, made to handle 3D better and being easier to program for, I think probably programmers and publishers would have kept developing multi-platform titles for the longest time. So as I said before, instead of having Tomb Raider 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 exclusively on the PlayStation, they could have still have been made for the Saturn, and unfortunately they weren't. And it was the lack of games, in my opinion, it was really, in the end, for the consumer, it was lack of games that really did the Saturn in.
Well, not to beat the dead horse, but you know, the same topics keep coming up about this, and that is poor marketing, early launch, difficulty in programming, and then brand recognition. All of these were really difficult to get over. You know, as a consumer, I look at the 32X on a Genesis. You know, I was a kid at the time, right? I mean, like, intermediate high school, and you're looking at that setup and you're just going, well, okay, if this thing is supposed to upgrade my Genesis to a 32-bit system, then why would I want to get a Saturn? And then you get the Saturn, you look at the cartridge port going, how come I can't play my Genesis games in this? What's the point? So It's already been said, and I agree with everyone else's points on this. Sega, you know, pardon the expression, they screwed the pooch. And there was just too much product out there, not enough knowledge, no backwards compatibility, and yeah, it was just terrible.
Yeah, I mean, you guys covered all of those issues pretty thoroughly. I mean, I certainly agree that almost all of those issues were baked in well before the Saturn was even released. And by the time, you know, regardless of whether they stuck to the Saturn Day launch date or, you know, or their surprise launch, I mean, I think the other mounting issues and also just being hamstrung by the decisions of Sega Japan, I mean, really did limit how successful that console was going to be able to or was going to be. But all of that said, I'm honestly not sure I would have wanted Sega to do much differently at all. I mean, I've always kind of felt it was Sega's incompetence on the business side of things that allowed their creative efforts to flourish in the first place. And I mean, if Sega had more wherewithal to sell a console and games that would actually succeed in a market that was, you know, increasingly abandoning style games that Sega was known for, that was their bread and butter. I don't think the Saturn would have, you know, had as many great and memorable titles that at least would have appealed to me specifically in that vein. And it really was those vibrant arcade style Sega ports that truly defined the system for me. And if Sega had done things a little differently and maybe not had all of made all those marketing and architecture mistakes early on and had better foresight that 3D was going to be where the console needed to go, perhaps its library maybe would have been, you know, wouldn't have been as unique as it was, and it might have looked a lot more like the PlayStation's. But if I had to say one thing, maybe, you know, later on they could have brought more of its JRPGs and other Japanese exclusive heavy hitters out west. I know Final Fantasy VII pretty much signaled a massive resurgence of interest in the RPG genre. And so it seemed like it probably could have been more low-hanging fruit for them to translate and bring over Grandia and scenarios 2 and 3 of Shining Force 3 and Dragon Force 2 and Police Knots and all of those. But, you know, of course, I'm probably underestimating all the money and resources that would have been needed to make that happen.
All right, so now that we've got the Saturn's past out of the way, let's talk about a little bit about the Saturn's present. You know, with so many consoles and gaming experiences out there, you know, what is the most appealing part of the Sega Saturn in regards to its gaming? How much playtime does it get? Are you currently collecting for the Saturn? You know, if so, does collecting for the Saturn take priority over gaming on the Saturn or vice versa? And if that be the case, how are you preserving your collection for the system?
Okay, I'm going to jump in here. For me at the moment, the Saturn's taking all my gaming time, and it's taking all my play time, and it's taking all my money in terms of my collecting budget. The reason for that is that in the two periods of my Saturn love, which would probably be 1996 to 1998, and then 2006 to about maybe 2010, I just think that the Saturn in 2017 has become the most important system for me because I had no idea what was available. I've got my Saturn with the pseudo Saturn mod on the Action Replay card now, so that everything that is available on the Saturn is now available to me. I had no idea what was available in Japan. I had no idea about some of the rarer games. So for me, 2017 has been a journey of discovery, and the only thing I'm spending money on at the moment is the Saturn. Bought a JVC Saturn for about £200, which is more than you'd have to pay for a PS4. and the gaming I'm doing on the Saturn is all the import games, shmups, 2D fighters, things I've never heard about. It's the most exciting system for me at the moment because there's so much available. I had no idea what was available on this system, and I am just absolutely having the time of my life discovering what's available and enjoying it. In terms of collecting, I am buying imports, I'm buying rare games, but the really rare games, the priciest ones. I'm enjoying having a few reproduction copies of those games. I've just discovered the scene of repro packaging and the scene of repro disc construction. And so I'm finding that you can buy things which look as good and play as good as the real thing, and I'm happy to do that. So all of my money at the moment is going on the Saturn.
So one of the biggest things that I do when I do not collect for the Saturn, I do when it's when I can get it for a decent price or something fair, but most of the time it gets backlogged by the Dreamcast or the Neo. So essentially, for playtime, I'm a really busy guy with college and stuff, so I don't have a ton of time to play, but I love playing shmups and 2D fighters because a lot of them are pick up and go. So if I have 5 minutes to do some gaming or something, I will plop in a disc and play some Gunbird or something like a Radiant Silver Gun or Botsu Gun or one of my favorites, Game Paradise. Probably one of my favorite shmups on that system. But in collecting terms, I have a three-tiered approach where it's Dreamcast, Neo Geo, and Saturn just to keep the price down. And that's what I'm really interested in right now. So it'll be either of those three. If it's Nintendo, I'll skip on it unless it's something like really I'm really interested in. But for the most part, if it's really good, high quality, it's always Saturn, Dreamcast, or Neo Geo. And I just love the system. It's fun to collect for the most part. The Japanese stuff's probably the majority of my collection, though. With looking right here, like a 5-to-1 ratio of games, U.S. games to Japanese games.
You know, a lot of people like to talk about collecting for systems, whether it be, you know, people up on YouTube having little videos and everything, dropping how many games they picked up this month. But I wouldn't really consider myself a collector. I am in an extent that I purchase games that I like, and I like them to be complete in box. You know, I was talking to Dave the other day about this. I counted them this morning, so I had the number right in front of me. I have 207 U.S. titled games for the Sega Saturn, and I have 34 Japanese games, okay? I have a grand total of both of those combined, less than 30 games complete in box, because I decided to sell off my entire collection like back in the middle 2000s, and that was back when they were cheap. They're not cheap anymore. So actually finding them complete in box was extraordinarily expensive, so I decided to, you know, just pick up disc only. That was nice. But in regards to collecting, I don't just collect for the Sega Saturn. I collect for the Dreamcast, PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2, PlayStation 3, Xbox, Xbox 360, Sega Master System. I've almost got a complete U.S. collection of that. I also pick up for, PS4. I've actually got about 50 PS4. I mean, I collect for a lot of different things. I've got 16 different systems in this house. So whenever it comes to gaming-wise, I don't necessarily have all of my time dedicated to the Saturn like other people do. I try to mix match it because I can get burned out on systems, the Saturn included. I actually have a board over here where I put all of my information down, and a couple of the guys from Titancast have seen it, where I actually schedule out my games. And right now I have about 30 games I have to play over the next 3 months to try to knock some of my backlog down. And probably about 15 of those games are Saturn, including three of which my wife picked up for me. But I've already beat them, so I figured that now that I actually have the physical copy, I'm going to beat it again. But, that's kind of how I roll.
Yeah, and I definitely agree with you on the collect-what-you-play sort of thing. And because one of my biggest philosophies is that I really love, I play what I collect, so if I'm not going to play it, I don't get it, so a lot of like the sports games or some weird Saturn games, it's just not in my collection. It's all 100% pure and zero pulp.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna lie and say that I don't have some filler in there. I mean, there's plenty of titles that are filler, but a lot of those games are the ones that they're kind of like, you know, the guilty pleasures of sorts, I guess you can say. I picked it up for about not even $15. Most of the time it's $5, $6 for those games. And I'll pick them up and I'll play them and I'll put them there. I'm just not really big into the selling back, man. I can tell you right now, there is only one game I have ever traded back in, and that was Tom Clancy's the Division on PS4. I spent maybe 12 hours on that game, and I said, nah, I ain't doing this.
They don't got no shmups in that game.
Exactly, man, exactly.
Yeah, well, You know, a lot like Simon. It's funny, when I listen to Simon talk, it sounds like my life. You know, I mean, it's funny because I had an initial run with the Saturn, and then, you know, you just have periods falling out or just kind of, but I always keep coming back to it. I've noticed, like, I did in the mid 2000s, I did have a period of just like burning discs. And that's why I tell Kay, I've got like a whole CD binder. Like, I've got these huge libraries of CD binders just filled with Japanese games, because that was the time period where I was really discovering everything that the import library had to offer. And I did fall in love with the Saturn again through that time. And then, of course, kind of took a break from it with the Dreamcast. That's another console that I just love so much, and everything that it has to offer. And, you know, there came a point where I was just like, you know, I love these games so much, but I own so few of them, real copies, you know. And at the time, it seemed like the stupidest thing to try to get into, because I was already well aware of how expensive they were. And I was just like, do I really want to do this? Do I really want to bite the bullet and start, you know, collecting for this console that's already just way out of control? But, you know, when you love something so much like that, you do have a tendency. So, you know, it's been chipping away, and it's just been a slow progress, building up a U.S. collection. So, you know, with all of the gaming on Japanese titles, I kind of came back to the U.S. side and decided, you know, okay, this is what I need to be timely about, because it's only getting worse, you know. So I spent time chipping away at my U.S. collection, and I feel great about where it is right now. And yeah, I'm just, you know, trying to keep them in protective boxes to protect them. I know that, you know, time will wear them away, but, you know, I'm just trying to get as much play out of them as I can. And the Saturn does kind of sit in the center of my setup. I just spend the most time playing it because, like Simon says, it gives me these bite-sized game play experiences where I can just jump on and Sega Rally. And it's just so funny how a game like that's so timeless like that, it just never gets old. I mean, it might look like that, you know, janky 32-bit 3D graphics, but there's just some charm about it, and I can just play it over and over and over again, and that's true of so many other great Saturn titles.
So, first of all, I don't collect. It's just not something that I do, that I'm interested in. I'm just interested in playing. Not that I don't appreciate boxes and cover art and stuff like that, but nowadays I mostly just get myself a backup. It's not something pretty to admit, but it's true. And something about my gaming habits nowadays, even though I have a lot of real hardware, real consoles, nowadays I just emulate everything on my PC. There's a long story about that. I'm not going to talk about it here. It would eat up a lot of time from the podcast, but I just emulate everything on my PC. And I mean, so many systems and so many different types of games that I just keep constantly changing things up, you know. I'm just constantly, yeah, going from one system to another, one type of game to another. I go with whatever interests me at the time. Still, I have a soft spot for the Saturn. Obviously, I mean, you know my history with the system by now. So I do try to give it some special attention, and there are still so many games that I never tried. I mean, when I think of the Saturn, so many popular games that most of you probably have played, and I haven't, and I still want to. So whenever I feel like playing some Saturn, I just look up a game that I haven't played. That I don't actually have a list, but imagine I have a metaphorical list of all the games I want to play on the Saturn. And yeah, I still love playing the Saturn. There are so many games that I haven't tried yet.
So, I have to admit that as of late, the Xbox One gets turned on more often than any other system in the house, primarily because it's a glorified YouTube or Netflix machine, not necessarily because of any real good game experiences on it. Not that there aren't good game experiences on it either, but, you know, you have a 4-year-old and YouTube is life. So, Saturn gaming for me, it has the best home experiences of the 2D fighters that I loved. It had a lot of game experiences like Fire Pro Wrestling, having a six-player Fire Pro party was one of the highlights. Having a four-player tag system long before Tekken Tag was a thing. Having 10-player Bomberman. So a lot of multiplayer game experiences that just really didn't exist anywhere else. It gets a little bit of playtime when I'm here working, but primarily I've switched gears from playing my Saturn towards preserving it. I am actively dumping every game I own using the same kind of software and the same hardware to produce the most accurate dumps possible for part of the redump project. And so you'll find a lot of my time with my Saturn these days is checking out my collection and seeing if they have any read errors or data holes in them. As far as collecting, yeah, I'm still there. I'm two discs away from a complete US set, and I don't think I'm ever going to see those two discs in my actual ownership. And then, of course, trying to get all the expensive and rare Japanese games to be part of that project.
Wow. So, I mean, first of all, and maybe we'll get into this a little later, but just that whole effort, those efforts towards preserving and archiving the Saturn library, I mean, I think are going to go a long way to keeping the system relevant, for generations to come. But anyway, when it comes to both playing and collecting, I just got to say I'm helplessly impulsive and very easily distracted. So it's a very rare occurrence that I can just sit down long enough with like a story-driven game and play it all the way to completion before I get distracted by something else. So yeah, echoing the sentiments that Dave and Simon shared earlier, I really have always gravitated towards those quick, easy to pick up, difficult to master experiences that the arcade excelled in as a way to kind of add variety to whatever else I may be trying to work on or play at the time. And while I do tend to alternate off and on between most of my retro consoles, I'm cycling all the time. I mean, I'm just as distracted when it comes to what I have hooked up on either of my televisions. But I have played the Saturn probably more consistently over the last couple of years than any other console, including the Dreamcast and some of those. And I probably play it about, four or five times a week for a couple hours on average. But regarding collecting specifically, maybe I'm more of a collector, I'm less of a collector and maybe more of a hoarder. Because I don't really have any budget or a set budget or goals for acquiring the games. I really have no tact or strategy with any of that. I just kind of buy whatever looks interesting. And I'm as I mentioned earlier, I'm helplessly impulsive. So I end up buying a lot of games as I see blog write-ups and videos and reviews on a lot of games that just look interesting that I want to play at the time. And as prices of the, especially games in North America, have skyrocketed, I've currently been focusing on picking up Japanese versions of a lot of games, especially exclusives that never made it out west, as well as cheaper alternatives of insanely expensive titles like, House of the Dead and Saturn Bomberman. So I do end up buying a lot of games that I never have time to play. But I think the Saturn is not really unique in that regard. But as often as I do play the Saturn, I feel like there's a pretty good balance. And I do get a pretty good enjoyment out of most of its arcade style games without demanding too much time to dedicate to them.
So I just wanted to add that even though I have a small collection, I have around 10 games, and most of them are the same games that I had as a kid. So they do have a special meaning for me, and I want to preserve them as best as I can. I obviously don't expose them to sunlight and basic stuff like that. But when it comes to playing, if I want to play one of the games I own on an emulator, I usually make my own backup of the game. There's no really good reason for that. I mean, you could consider that is because some backups on the web are just not done properly, and I probably am not doing it properly. I bet Kay would have something to add about that, the proper way to make a backup of your own disk. but they work. And I just wanted to point that out because I've never done this for any other system. Like, the first time I've ever made a backup of a game that I own to play, it was for the Saturn. And it actually was for Christmas Nights, a Japanese import that Simon gave to me a long time ago. So I really don't want to put the original disc in danger.
So I got asked in our chat what two discs I'm missing from my set. And I am missing the demo. It is Sega Screams Volume 2. And I'm missing the disc only, because I actually have the manual. I'm missing the disc for Daytona Netlink. But beyond that, my collection includes every disc variant that I know of, every revision variant that I know of. Yeah, there's a lot there.
Well, now that we know that Kay is absolutely a hoarder, let's get down to the meat and potatoes of this. You know, a lot of people like to get involved with the actual setup, the video, the audio, all that nice fancy jazz. So what is your current video setup? Is this your preferred setup, or do you have any plans to upgrade?
Okay, I'm going to jump in really quick and say this is not my area of expertise. All I can say is that I use a SCART lead, and that's been something I've used for a long time, because European TVs had SCART plugs a long time before US TVs, I gather. So I've always used a SCART lead for, I would say, about the past 10 years with the Saturn. And that's all I've got to say on that one.
All right. So currently right now, I actually have my Saturn going through a SCART lead as well, a G-SCART switch, which is basically just a two-output, eight-input SCART switch box. One that goes to my JVC BM1900SU, which is a video monitor that's about 750 lines. And the other one goes to a SCART to HDMI upscaler that goes into my capture card, which allows me to stream. Currently, the audio I have is routed through a receiver, which either has the two speakers on the top, or just two speakers I have that are on the top of my ceiling, or it goes to a pair of headphones, which is I think it's Audio Technica 80900X, ATH900X, which are really, really good headphones. And I'm an AV freak, so I do a lot of that stuff. So, I mean, if anybody that's listening wants some advice or has any questions about that, just let me know. But yeah, that's what I'm running right now. And in terms of upgrading, I think I'm good for now. I'd like to get a BVM, maybe something that does like up to 1080i. But I mean, I'm happy with what I got right now. I have like 3 PVM, so I mean, I'm not going to complain much.
You know, my setup is kind of a hodgepodge right now. I'm really shameful to say this, but I do not have a way to switch out all my SCART leads besides unplugging them and replugging them in. So hopefully the SCART gods will watch over me and not allow any of my cables to become messed up. But all of my consoles that are RGB capable, except for the PlayStation 2, are all run through RGB straight over to just hanging on the side of a shelf. All of those go directly into the FrameMeister, and the FrameMeister outputs HD over to my 40-inch Sony Bravia that I've had since probably 2006, 2007. The PS4 is the only exception. It's hooked up to the 50-inch Samsung 4K up front. Now, if it's component available, I run a component. If it's HD available and I can throw an HDMI cable into it, I just pass it straight through the FrameMeister. Only exception being is that I also have a SCART 2 component box that I use to get all of my SCART inputs into component format, YPBPR, so that I can plug it into my 20-inch flat screen Toshiba. I use that for all my light games and for my shmups. I have to say, though, that my 20-inch Toshiba is kind of on its last leg. Talked to David a little bit about possibly trying to rejuvenate it, if that's even possible. But the top eighth of the screen is just about all but gone. There's still color there, but it kind of makes me sad. So if anybody out there in the podcast realm has a nice little 20-inch CRT from Toshiba, the flat screen kind, and you're willing to part with it, and you're not a million miles away from Louisiana, then we can probably hook up and we can probably make some kind of dealings.
I gotcha. So basically what you had is you wanted a 20-inch LCD or a 20-inch CRT?
This is a 20-inch CRT.
I gotcha. To be honest, I would just go out and look for the Sony Trinitrons with the component adapter, component leads, and just do a SCART to component transcoder. So that way you can have all the benefits of the SCART on a consumer TRT and not have to pay $5 million for a CRT, which is ridiculous for some of these prices.
I mean, that's already what I do. I mean, I SCART RGB over to YPBPR and then throw it into the back of the CRT. So I'm already converting the signal over.
Okay, yeah, that's good. Yeah, but yeah, definitely. Do you have problems selling like the Trinitrons locally or something?
Dude, CRTs are almost unavailable around here except for old JVCs and, just off brands.
I gotcha.
Yeah, so my video setup is pretty much opposite of what most people are doing these days. And I think that I have the Dreamcast to blame for that because, you know, back in about a decade ago, I got my hands on a Dreamcast VGA box and I plugged that sucker into a PC CRT monitor. And I was just blown away. I mean, it just redefined. I was just like, how can the Dreamcast look this good? I've you know, been playing the Dreamcast for years, and I never knew a console, an older retro console, could look this good. And the question I asked myself is, why can't all my other consoles do this? Or maybe they can, and I just don't, you know. So I, at that point, and this was before PVMs or BVMs were really a word on people's tongues, I just, you know, started going down this road of trying to search out how to get all my consoles to do VGA. And I talked to Fudo over on the Shmups forums, and it turned out there were ways. You know, I could use the Waka, which is a proprietary Sony line doubler for the PlayStation. I could use the XRGB2, which outputs VGA, and it line doubles SCART or JP21 RGB from the Saturn. And I could use the D-Video Edge to handle the PlayStation and do line doubling and deinterlacing for that. So literally everything I have, including my PC gaming, goes directly into a 22-inch Pro CRT graphic monitor. And I absolutely love it. It's a Mitsubishi. Mitsubishi all the way, man.
So I actually still have an actual Saturn console hooked up to my bedroom TV, which is a CRT with a SCART cable, which I use for light gun games. And I still play with it from time to time, but mostly I emulate, as I said. And I hope you didn't think I was talking about sitting in front of my PC on my desk. When I'm talking about emulating, I have my PC in my living room, in a corner of the living room, hooked up to the LCD with an HDMI cable. And I have both a 6-axis wireless controller and a Play Sega controller, which I talked about on Saturn's Junkyard. It's basically a knockoff made by Sega, but with inferior components. A knockoff of the original Saturn gamepad, but with a USB connection. So in terms of controls, I get almost an original experience. And I emulate using Madnaffen, the Madnaffen core for RetroArch. And I think emulation is really a fascinating subject. I mean, people spend so much time talking about, not that I'm against, talking about discussing the best ways to hook up old consoles like the Saturn to newer TVs. But emulation is such a fascinating topic, in my opinion. In terms of video quality. On one hand, you have lots of advantages, like you automatically have the proper aspect ratio, you have the proper frame rate for whatever game you're trying to play, and then you have shaders, and shaders are like, they're like filters, but very advanced filters, and you can get so different styles of looks. You can play, you can use shaders that like that emulate the look of a PBM, or others that emulate the look of an average consumer TV from back when we were kids. And you have so much control over the quality picture than the style of picture that you have on Saturn. It's just amazing.
Well, that sounds pretty awesome, Nuno. I actually want to follow that up. What got you interested in playing around with those settings and those shaders?
because I, on one hand, I'm just curious to try different ways to make the games look in different ways. But mostly, it's just to capture the feeling of playing on an actual CRT monitor. It might seem ridiculous that I could be playing on a monitor, but I have my reasons to prefer nowadays. But still, even though I'm emulating, I'm playing with something, a controller that kind of resembles the original controller, and I want the graphics to resemble the original graphics. For example, if I had my Saturn connected to an HDTV, for me that would feel wrong. I'm not obviously not judging any of you who do that, to each their own, but for me, I hate the clean look, a clean, like, pixel-perfect look for old consoles. It just looks wrong to me. I like so much better when they're kind of blurry and, you know, the typical look of an actual CRT TV, like the ones we used to have before LCDs took over.
One more question for you. What is your preferred emulator?
Nowadays, it's definitely like no question about it. It's Madnaffin. Now, you could play... Back in the day, SSF was really popular, but nowadays, I'm so much into Madnaffin, I'm just not going back. And you can play with the standalone Madnaffin emulator, or you can play with RetroArch Core. I didn't have anything to add after that. It's kind of a big topic. I don't want to go too overboard on it. I'm already probably talking way too much about it, and I don't want to take more time, but it really is a topic that we could talk about it for a long time. But the short answer is that I'm playing on the Madnaffin Core for RetroArch, which is kind of like an emulator all-in-one for lots of systems. A bit complicated.
Yeah, I really wanted to, you know, let you have a little bit more time to speak on that, mostly because out of everyone here, I think you're probably going to be the only one with that kind of a setup. And I think our listeners would probably be very interested in knowing, you know, how best to have that emulation and, you know, what route to go through. So it might be another article you can do for the Junkyard in the future.
I have that planned out. I just don't know when I'll get around to it, but it's in the works.
Awesome.
Yeah, we'll probably have to dedicate a Titancast to it per episode.
Most certainly.
On my end, Dave mentioned talking with Fudo, and I haven't talked with him, but I did talk with a lot of RGB enthusiasts back, oh gosh, as far as almost 20 years ago now, which led me down the path that I have. So. My initial RGB screen is a Mitsubishi MegaView Pro 37-inch, and it's a professional CRT. And I later on got a Panasonic Pro plasma monitor. The nice thing about that is that you actually have a SCART input on the back that you can plug into a receiver box. So native SCART on a plasma flat screen. I also have an XRGB2 and an XRGB Mini or Framemeister. I own BVMs or PVMs, and my main Saturn screen right now is a BVM 1911, which is sitting right in front.
Okay, well, wow. So I'm extremely low-tech compared to all y'all. And to be perfectly honest, most of the words you guys have been throwing around are just flying right over my head. Eventually, you know, I would like to get a Framemeister or OSSC or something, but I definitely sympathize with people who don't have the cash to dump into an elaborate setup like that. And I certainly lack the technical know-how to get the most out of that kind of thing at the moment. But right now I do alternate between a couple of setups. About 80% of my time, I have my Saturn hooked up to a Sony Trinitron CRT, which is in my bedroom. And it does have a component input. So, you know, maybe I should consider getting a SCART to component adapter that Patrick, I think you mentioned earlier. But right now, I also the other 20% of the time, I just use a cheapo, like $40 SCART to HDMI converter in my living room. And it actually is pretty, it's decent enough. I've tried a few of them, and this one's better than most without being a full-on upscaler. For my needs and as thick as my glasses are, it's good enough. I just don't really have the I just wouldn't really notice too much of a difference, but I'm sure I would love to get a FrameMeister and that'll all change. But more and more, I just use my HD TV for my current my current gen consoles, as well as Dreamcast with the Acura. And every now and then I'll hook up the Saturn when friends come over and we'll play Saturn Bomberman or some fighting games, or if I want to capture some footage through the Elgato.
Yeah, Brian, I'm kind of a bit envious of you in that regards, because you had a whole new world to explore, all these things to look into. I mean, when I first got into it, it's like I was digging all over the place. I was looking through crevices, forums, videos on YouTube, and just trying to get the best opinions. And I think the journey is long, but it's a lot of fun. And especially for someone like me, a college student that wasn't able to, I don't have a lot of cash to do that as well. It's a lot of fun to do that. So I hope you do that transcoder, RGB to write YPBPR transcoder. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to open up a whole new world of beautifulness to you.
Yeah, I'm looking at that, and you know, slowly but surely. And I feel like I'll probably get just as much out of the Shiro podcast when you guys talk about that stuff, and also when Nuno and Sam talk extensively about those setups, that there's just a lot of knowledge here to glean, and I feel fortunate to be able to pick your guys' brains about it.
Okay, I'm just going to chime in here and say that one of the major hassles for Saturn owners is being able to play light gun games, and if you, like me, have got rid of all of the CRT TVs in your house around the time that we switched over to digital, then you're going to have to find ways of lumping these huge things back into your house, as I have done over the past couple of years, simply so you can play your light gun games. I have many light gun games for the Dreamcast and Saturn combined, but I think it's just something that's a real drag that you can't play it on your flat screen TV. But if you are to get the full experience of owning a Saturn, you've got to play Virtua Cop. You've got to play, perhaps, you've got to play House of the Dead. So you're going to need a CRT TV as well as your flat screen digital. That's just something I thought I'd mention.
All right, gents. We're skirting around, the repro scene. We're skirting around emulation. So let's just go ahead and get into it. What are your thoughts on the current emerging repro scene, CD drive emulation, and how do you see it affecting the Saturn and Saturn collectors in the future?
Okay, I'm going to say that, first of all, I think to be a collector these days is almost an impossible goal. If you're hoping a full PAL collection or a full US collection, you're going to have to fork out an awful lot of money. And nowadays, there's repros being made that are of absolute equal beauty and equal quality to the originals. So for me, if you are someone that wants to collect an entire collection, why kill yourself? Go for the repros. They are made to order. They are really done with quality materials. And for me, they are as beautiful as the originals, perhaps more so because the originals have been ravaged by time very often. So I'm 100% in favor of repros. If the price scene was realistic, if people were greedy, then perhaps we could go for the originals. But the fact of the matter is, you can own the experience on a just an ordinary burned disc with a marker pen title. But if you want that whole experience of having the packaging as well, then definitely go for the repros. I'm 100% in favor of it. And if it knocks down the prices of the overinflated Radiant Silver Guns and Panzer Dragoon Sagas, great. I think that would be a good thing. It's more than likely that those things are going to retain their huge price tags, though, because the originals will be sought after whatever. But I'm 100% in favor of the repro scene.
To add to that a bit, I'm all for the repros. One of the things that I have a big thing about is that I don't mind them as long as it's something that doesn't exist. So like Police Knots or Dragon Force 2, well in the US of course. And then and it's obviously labeled as a repro, so if it said, okay, this is a reproduction of this game, it's not original, you need to get this and that to work. In terms of the Saturn, I'm fine with. In terms of the CD drive and emulators, I think that's going to be really the future of the Saturn. As people, companies are sort of getting rid of these, some of the CD burning things to normal consumers and some of the blank CDs, it might be more and more difficult to do this. And I think these CD emulators would be a lot easier because instead of getting a bunch of discs, burning them, putting it on there, you just put them on yourself, rip the discs, put them on there, put them in the emulating drive, and just get a giant SD card for them. And I think it's not really going to affect collectors in the long run. The people that want to buy Pendragon only original, they're not buying it to play it for the most. Well, some of them are not buying it to play it. It's because they really want in their collection to have something on their shelf. I mean, a lot of people confuse gamers and collectors, gamers and general collectors, and say that, oh, well, this is going to affect the price, and that's not true at all. It's not like vinyl records where the prices will drop or decrease by new pressings or new quantities found. I think a lot of people are worried about that, but I don't think it's going to affect it at all. And I'd like to see how you guys feel about that as well.
You know, I was talking to Dave about this just the other day. Like I said earlier, I have a massive CD-only collection or disc-only collection. Now that you have companies like Limited Run Games talking about they're going to drop out as close to original, if not exactly the same as original boxes that the North American games came in, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to buy a crap ton of them, and I'm going to throw reproduction artwork in them. I don't shame anybody or disagree with anybody who spends tons of money on collecting, but whenever it comes to me, I am more about gaming. Yes, I want it to look nice on the shelf, but I'm more about gaming. And I want those games to be there. I'm going to be honest with you. I do not own a copy of Panzer Dragoon. I'm not about to spend $400 on a game that I might play once, maybe once a year. That's just the truth. I will gladly buy a reproduction or make a reproduction of that game.
Try $500, not $400.
Yeah. I'm not doing it. I'm not by any means endorsing piracy or anything of that matter. I'm just saying, me personally, I'm not going to pay $400 or $500 for a game. So, you know, with that being said, going along with the CD emulation, complete drive replacements. My Life in Gaming did an excellent video just a little while back, and they were talking about, you know, how they did this, you know, what they were all doing. And they explained it in real layman's terms. And I think it's good for the Saturn community because it's giving people options who have never had, they've never had experience with the Saturn. A lot of people don't even want to get involved with the Saturn because the one thing they know about it is the games are absurdly expensive. Well, if you have a way to play any game you want to outside of emulation on a computer, I mean, come on. I'll be honest with you. My wife is a Nintendo fangirl, and I bought her a Super Nintendo. I might have maybe 10 games for the Super Nintendo. Other than that, I have an EverDrive. I'm not going to spend that much money on something that is about enjoyment. You know, I'm not going. I have a mortgage. I have a daughter. I have time. I have to, you know, dedicate to those things. And I'm not going to spend the rest of my life gambling or going to work, you know, from dusk to dawn just to play games.
Yeah, I think playing the games and enjoying them while we're still alive is the most important thing. I don't care if you have a CD wallet full of burned discs or if you have a shelf full of real games. What's real important is that you take them out of that wallet or take them off that shelf and put them in the console and actually play them. That's what they were designed for. And they're not going to bring you a whole lot of happiness on the shelf, and they certainly won't bring you any happiness after you're dead. And there's a very small chance that your children will take to it like you do or value it like you do, so they may end up in an estate sale. You just don't know what's going to happen, you know. So as far as repros go, I'm in favor of them as long as they are branded as such, you know, as long as it's really obvious that they are repros and that they are crafted pieces of artwork, because basically they're forgeries. And I mean, forgeries are no stranger to the art world, you know, so you're going to have forgeries in every field. But you know, I know that I agree with Kay that as long as they are branded clearly so that consumers know what they're getting, then that's fine. For me, myself, I like to do customs. I'm not really into repros so much as customs of games that never really existed to begin with. That's pretty much all I have time for. I work a 9-to-5, and so I don't have a whole lot of time to recreate repros, but I do like to do customs as a hobby, and what a fun hobby it is too, and just being a part of this emergent community that's interested in this. I can't even believe that it's a thing, you know, because a year ago I never would have thought. But anyway, it's real exciting, the kind of stuff that's coming out. And I have so much appreciation and admiration for folks like Kay, A Murder of Crows, and Ben Boyd, and all those guys who are just doing so much awesome artwork and putting it out there.
So, as I said, I'm not a collector, but on the other hand, I do appreciate physical boxes and cover art and just holding the game in my hands. I think it really adds something to the experience besides just what you're looking at on the screen, having something related to the game in your hands. And when I was a kid, I actually used to kind of do my own repros. Whenever I burned a disc, I would go online looking for a high-quality scan of the cover art and print it out and put it in a... either in a CD case or in a DVD box or something like that. So I am absolutely all for repros. I think they're great. I don't own any yet, but I think they're great. But as I said, I'm not a collector. So if I were, maybe I would have a different opinion about that, because I do know collectors are sometimes afraid of repros influencing the price of the games, kind of bringing down the price of the original games. About drive emulation, I think we all agree that it's just awesome. We all know that optical media won't be around forever. The lasers on the console drives won't be around forever. And even burnable media is even going down. I think the Shiro guys talked about in one of your podcasts about how Taiyuyu then went down, and which was probably the best manufacturer of burnable CDs in the world. And these things won't be around forever. So having a replacement and kind of a more sturdy and durable replacement is just an awesome thing all around. I think it's great.
All right. So elephant in the room, I guess. I've been making reproduction discs for probably about 2 years, maybe a little more. And I have this philosophy about not just reproductions, but just across the board. The first story I want to kind of touch on is the saga of my Street Fighter Alpha 2 Saturn disc. The disc does not look bad. There are no data holes in it. There's no obvious signs of disc rot. And yet it can't get through a session of being read for the redump project at all. And that led me to try and buy another one, which ended up being perfectly fine. And you wouldn't be able to tell the difference between the two discs. This media, it's going to go away. We won't have any control over it. And I think we had a very depressing podcast, actually, about what will happen to our media. So I am definitely a fan of preserving anything, and I don't particularly care in that. I guess the easiest way to say it is that we have invested our money in these systems, and the fact is that these systems are 20 years old, and there wasn't really much thought put in by the original manufacturers of these systems to continue selling these games. So in the case of Panzer Dragoon Saga, the source code's lost. The only way you're going to play it is either on an emulator or copy, or you're going to pay $500 for it. You know, so I am a big fan of reproduction as long as there's no way to mistake the reproduction for an actual legitimate version of the game. And I don't care what game it is that you're reproducing, whether it was one that was never available, like a translated Dragon Force 2, or one that is available, as long as you can tell the difference. And I know I'm going over time here just a slight bit, but with optical drive emulation, I'm also a big fan of that. The main focus that I have is that I don't want to lose functionality of a Sega system or any system when you throw in an ODE. So I would be much happier if we had an option to attach the hard drive or the SD card to the back of the system and not lose our optical options.
Yeah, actually I did buy a Dragon Force 2 repro copy, a spiffy, and really to echo your guys' comments, you know, I think any efforts to preserve the Saturn's library and improving the accessibility of newcomers who want to collect for it, that's really the name of the game, and I support any efforts that go towards stabilizing the economics of game collecting for the Saturn. And I really especially appreciate the efforts of those of you out there, including you guys, Kay and Dave and Ben Boyd out there, who are creating repros that look really professional and unique. And especially when you guys put your own spin on the design of the art materials and just really make something that looks really tangible and unique, because I mean, really you're really buying the display packaging and that's really what I would value above all else. And I really don't mind, you know, paying for that effort. And I think that anyone who can just make the Saturn library more accessible to folks like myself, you know, I'm going to support that.
One thing I wanted to bring up before we close out is that I noticed a lot of stuff in the collecting scene about people that look down on people that burn or emulate and do this and that and just are the ones that don't like collect the real media or don't have like a large collection. And I think that that's really a bad attitude to have to some of these collectors or to some of the people that play the Saturn, because at the end of the day, we're all keeping the Saturn alive in our own way. I mean, not everybody can afford $500 Panzer Dragoons or close to a couple hundred for Burning Rangers, but they want to play it. I mean, if they want to do an emulation and or burning or repros, I'm fine with that as long as they share the love in it. And I'm that we should all come together as Saturn fans and sort of not separate in terms of collecting or this and that, which I think everybody on this podcast is really good at doing, and we're all inclusive. So if you guys want to share your Saturn setups and stuff, just let us know, or how you guys sort of, I don't know, consume the Saturn is a good way to put it.
Well, I know I've talked a lot about emulation, but let me just add something, because sometimes gamers are so derisive of emulation. They think that it's some kind of easy and dirty way to play games instead of actually owning the original hardware and doing it the quote-unquote proper way. But in the end, emulation is not just about playing the games, it's about preservation. In the end, like 100 years from now, every Saturn console and every CD is going to have been destroyed, you know, it's not going to be around. So, and emulation really is the way of the future. Like when you're talking about really deep into the future, emulation is the best way to really preserve both the hardware and the games.
So with the present out of the way, let's go ahead and get a little bit into the future of the Sega Saturn. You know, we have numerous things on the horizon, like the Retrobit putting out new hardware. We also have people in the background still working on ways to have card options for, you know, actually inputting the games. We have numerous things on the table that could possibly just change the entire Sega Saturn collecting and Sega Saturn gaming community. So with that being said, how about let's get a little blast on that.
Okay, my hopes for the future are that the community keeps growing, because the biggest thrill for me in 2017 has been to see how big the community has gotten. We first launched the Dreamcast Junkyard in 2006, and there was nothing like the response that there has been for the second launch of it. So yeah, that's my hope, that the community keeps growing, that people that didn't experience the Saturn first time round are going to realize what a fantastic system it is. And what would be an absolute dream for me is if some new games could appear for the Saturn. We've already had some vaporware appearing thanks to Kay. It would be amazing if people could actually code new games for the Saturn in the same way that they have done for the Dreamcast. And I know that's a completely different kettle of fish, that making new games for the Dreamcast is a lot easier than it is for the Saturn. But my hopes are there that one day we'll see some new commercial releases for the Saturn. That would be my absolute aspiration.
One of the things that I think most excites me the most about it is the Dr. Abrasive's Saturn emulation card. Basically, essentially what the CD EMU was, except that it goes into the back of the system where they can basically use both the CD drive and the you can still use the CD drive, but you can also use a SD card reader on the back, so you can actually play those games that are too expensive, or maybe your CD drive's dead and you just want to use that exclusively. And he's also coming out with a wireless controller adapter, apparently. I don't know if he's working on that or what's in the works with that. But apparently it's going to be able to allow use for wireless controllers, and hopefully maybe they can incorporate something where it's like maybe you can use like a PS3 or PS4 controller with it, and you can just sit in your HDTV and just play some Virtual On or something. So that's really what excites me the most, and that the prospects on the hill for those.
You know, the one thing that I've been talking about, people, is you know, you have the retro bit with new hardware coming out and everything. But my biggest thought process is this right here. If we have the ability to take a Sega Saturn, we have source code, we have all this information, and we can actually put a new console on the market, whether it be, you know, a Sega Saturn Mini or whatever the case is, if we can reconsolize the system and somebody can come up with a way of putting a different optical drive into it. I know this is getting out there, but, you know, we talked about how CD drives are becoming a thing of the past, how CD media is becoming a thing of the past. Well, the next thing up right now is Blu-rays. If we, and, you know, for the size of how much information can be put on the Blu-ray, you could put a massive amount of games, if not an entire library, on a single Blu-ray. So if we could find some way in the community of actually designing a Blu-ray drive that could be put into a new Sega Saturn. I'm not talking about just dropping in your old Sega Saturn, because eventually those things are going to die too. The components will eventually age. Eventually it will die. Otherwise, you're just going to replace every part of it, which I've replaced a lot of parts in people's Sega Saturns. But if you could actually take all the equipment, recreate it, put a new optical drive in it for a new optical age, then, I mean, we could be seeing a console that lasts another 30 years easily. And I mean, that possibility with what we have technically wise, that's what I'm looking forward to. It's not necessarily games. I'd love it if people could come out with some new games. But the option or the possibility of new hardware just blows my mind in 2017. Well, now 2018.
Yeah, same here. You know, the future looks bright for the Saturn. And I know that every one of us here is a part of that, just helping to get the word out, helping to get the love out there, increase awareness of the console. Because as we know, more and more people are finding out about this console. More and more previous PlayStation fans are just coming to this thing for the first time and saying, what did I miss, you know? And I know with guys like Zaiden and Sega RPG Fan working on the Netlink stuff, I'm so excited about that. They're just literally turning over every rock and trying to figure out, you know, any game that had support for it or how to reverse engineer that and redirect everything over to the DreamPipe so that you can start using your DreamPi with the Saturn. And right now we've got that VoIP adapter solution, at least in the interim. You know, so Sega Saturn is back online. We've also got, as Patrick mentioned, James Laird Waugh, or Professor Abrasive. You know, he's been working on some amazing things like the VCD SD card adapter that would bypass the CD block entirely and just allow you to load all of your images directly from a removable card so you don't have to do any modifications to your system. And then he was also working on wireless control, like Patrick said, and not just wireless control, not just RF, but wireless over the internet. even wireless display. He's able to use some kind of teleconferencing system to be able to control a Saturn over the internet and control it wirelessly. So there's some crazy implications of that. Of course, he's fallen on, you know, family issues and just difficulties, and that seems to be the way with a lot of people that start out on these projects. So my hope is that, you know, he's just able to push through that and really get through. And, you know, like Sam spoke to the fact that Retrobit has come up with capital and interest in investing. I wonder if he could hook up with them, you know, and share his tech with them. And they've got the capital and the production capability to make it happen, you know?
Well, Dave, I just want to add to that, that Professor Bracev is actually back. He's got that all sorted and everything's sorted for him. So he's starting back on that project. So hopefully we can see that by hopefully the end of the year, 2018.
Cool. Yeah.
Guess what? I'm going to talk about emulation again. Sorry. As I said, Medneffen right now is, in my opinion, the best Saturn emulator overall, bar none. But it still could improve. And I will, in fact, improve specifically in three different ways. First of all, it doesn't deal well with interlaced image. So games, for example, like Virtua Fighter 2 or Fighters Megamix look just terrible on it, because it can't mesh the two interlaced and it displays them kind of side by side, and it's just terrible. Another way that it could improve, it's very demanding on system in terms of your PC. I have an i5-4460 at 3.2 GHz, and for some games it barely gets the job done. So the lower the requirements get, the more people could play with it, could use it, even on stuff like laptops or something like that. So it would be a great way for the emulator to improve. And the last thing, I really think it should have, in the future, maybe not in the near future, but down the... It could introduce a hardware renderer so that we could get higher internal resolution for 3D games. Even though we could debate whether the 3D games in the Saturn would benefit from that or not, I think a lot of them really would benefit from higher internal resolution, so the graphics would be like playing a modern PC game at a really high resolution, like no jaggies, no aliasing, and I would love to see that. And on something that's not related to this, I hope they finish the Princess Crown translation, because I really want to play that game and my Japanese sucks.
Oh yeah.
So, on my end, modifications, reproductions, translations, and new software are kind of where I'm hoping things go. I know that there was a project back in, 2010, where some RF wireless controllers were made that were actually interchangeable, so you could use like a Super Nintendo controller on the Saturn or a Saturn controller on a Genesis. And I'd really love to see that, you know, project picked up again and, you know, condensed. I love the fact that development continues on Rhea and Phoebe. And, you know, just about a week ago, they released a new firmware that allows games that have Redbook audio involved directly to be patched and able to be used. So that's always nice. Continuing working with Cafe Alpha on Pseudo Saturn Full and the Saturn Gamers Cart. There's a hardware out there in China that I know of that's kind of a clone of the Gamers Cart of sorts that actually has RAM cart built in, which is kind of nice. Translations are a big thing for, I think, everyone, and trying to get more of that Japanese library to be accessible for non-English speakers would be really fantastic. The FRAM mod, so that we don't have to worry about losing our save data when our battery dies any longer. And I'm working with David Kias about doing some stuff for the Game Navi High Saturn as well. It's pretty awesome. I think the future is actually kind of bright. for a lot of these retro consoles, and the fact that we have so much passion. I mean, we've got, what is it, 7-8 guys across the world, different, you know, areas of the world together to talk about the Saturn for 2.5 hours. It's kind of mind-blowing, you know, that we have this many people who are involved at just our level, you know, fans, not even at the hardware level, you know, to talk about this system. And then I guess the final thing is getting the Saturn back online. You know, it'd be really neat to hack in Netlink capabilities or online capabilities to newer games, if that was ever going to be possible. Or more, I think, probable is getting the Japanese games back online.
So, yeah, I mean, you guys, I think, outlined a lot of those potential solutions, and there's just, it seems like there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic on, you know, just various technical levels regarding developments on the hardware side and the software and emulation side as well. And, you know, I think the community really is the key to sustaining all of this, to echo what pretty much everybody else has said. I'd love to see the Saturn scene continue to become more accessible, both for those who've been collecting for a while and people, and to just draw new people to garner new interest among newcomers. And, you know, that does require a variety of community-driven solutions, which you guys outlined and we're definitely seeing, to help even out the economics of getting involved with the Saturn. And I'm very optimistic about, you know, those community efforts that we're seeing to preserve the software, like, you know, circulating better quality image files and repros and prioritizing digital archival efforts, as well as the hardware side solutions like Dr. Professor Corrosive. Abrasive. Sorry. And you know, potentially whatever Retrobrit comes out with their new deal with Sega. You know, and the end goal of all of this, I feel, is to just even out those supply side barriers to make the Saturn library just more accessible for newcomers and accommodate that additional demand. And, you know, I'm also optimistic about the increasing participation of mediums that are just really just fan enthusiasm driven, like, you know, Shiro Podcast and Saturn Collectors of America and Saturn Memories and all the YouTubers out there that share that enthusiasm. It's, you know, very palpable. I guess maybe the Saturn Junkyard too. So, you know, I just feel like these platforms we have to
Thanks,
share.
Brian.
Gotta stay humble. Just, you know, sharing our, you know, having these platforms to share our Saturn nostalgia and share our new experiences as we continue to discover new things about the system and its games. And at the end of the day, I think it really is lowering those barriers for those who just want to play the Saturn in whatever capacity they're able to, whether that's hardcore or casual game collecting, or repros or, you know, Rhea, Phoebe, you know, or other general emulation. You know, however you got to do it, I feel like you got to be playing Saturn. Always be playing Saturn.
You must
play.
Yeah, you know, Saturn. I'm really so excited about the fact that this is this seems like a community effort, and I really do hope that companies like Retrobit and Limited Run Games won't be, will maybe be humble enough to reach out into the community and get help on some of these things, because there's so many talented individuals, like the guy who discovered a way of making a light gun work on LCDs using the Wii motion tech. And that's like simple tech. I mean, it's like a couple of light sensors, you know? So there's that. And then there's also Limited Run Games, commitment to putting out the long boxes, you know? So there's just a lot of stuff out there, and I'm hoping that they do reach out into the community and talk to people who have put a lot of their personal time into coming up with a lot of these solutions, but don't really have the means of bringing them to market, you know, and companies like Retrobit, maybe they do, you know, so that's what I'm excited about. I'm just so excited that the Saturn is a tight-knit community. We all care, you know?
I had one more thing that I'd wanted to mention. There are still covered games out there. not just revisions of games that, you know, pop up every once in a while, but completely new games that were at various levels of being completed that have not actually gone out to market. I'm very fortunate in that I have access to a large stack of these. And one of those games was a port of A Heart of Darkness, which I believe came out on the PlayStation. It will not run on a retail Saturn. And so one of the biggest things I have for the future that I'd love to be able to see and, you know, hopefully make happen is a means of being able to get that game to play, you know, on retail Saturns. So, yeah. Future is, you know, bright, actually, for this system, I think, anyway.
Lots of possibilities.
Very much so, very much so. So with all that being said, folks, you know, at least on behalf of the Titancast crew, I want to make it real clear that we are very thankful that we're able to be here today with the boys from Sega Saturn Shiro, that we were able to put this together for the community, not only for ourselves, because, I mean, it's not just for us. I mean, obviously other people listen to us. Well, at least hopefully. So we want to go ahead and thank those guys out there. And another thing is that if you are listening to the Titancast version of this, this will be dual dropped on both Sega Saturn Shiro and the Saturn Junkyard's Titancast. If you're listening to it on the Titancast side, go over there and check out the Shiro guys, man. They've got some awesome material out there. They really get into some deep stuff. Whereas, you know, us, we're more ringy-dingy, or however you want to put it. And if you're listening to it on the Shiro guys and you enjoyed the crapshoot that was the Titancast guys, come on over and join us, man. I mean, it's a nice little friendly community. I'm going to go ahead and do some drops real fast. If you aren't familiar, you can find the Sega Saturn Shiro guys over on YouTube. All you got to do is search in Sega Saturn Shiro. You can also find them on Podient. You can find them on iTunes, Google Play. I believe they have a Buzzsprout. I might be wrong about that. You can find Titancast. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on YouTube. You can find us on Buzzsprout. You can actually go to thesaturnjunkyard.com and find us on our blog at Blogspot. There's many numerous avenues to find both of our groups. And if you aren't involved in this community already, just reach out and get involved with it. It is a lot more fun to be had whenever you're actually enjoying games with other people, whereas just being stuck by yourself playing games. Because I can tell you right now, just dealing with these guys for the past 3 months, I have found out so much new information. And I could have never found that out if I had not been able to touch base with these guys.
Yes, and I'd also, as part of the Saturn Shiro, I'd love to thank these guys for being able to join us as well. They have really great insight and all those different perspectives worldly. I mean, you have one from Portugal, one from the UK, and one from America, and two of them from America. And it's really great to hear their perspective and their opinions on the Saturn, and especially some of their stuff that they're doing on the podcast, which I'm really excited for, especially their last podcast with the budget games. I thought that was a really fun topic, and I think they have a lot of good stuff coming up, and I would recommend that you guys definitely go listen to them and subscribe to both of us, because we both have different insights and opinions on things, so it's always good to get those double opinions. And don't think of us as sort of rivals or anything. It's a collaboration thing.
We're brothers.
We're working together to get the Saturn stuff out, so absolutely. I love these guys, and hopefully they love us too.
And this won't be the last time that we do this either. You know, like I said, this is a tight-knit community. We all know each other. And if we don't, we're going to, you know, because you spend enough time with this console in this community, you're going to find these people, you know. And as Sam said, please feel free to reach out to us. Reach out to us on Messenger. Reach out to us in the comments. Don't feel like we're elitist or like we don't have time to answer your questions. We want to answer your questions. That's why we're doing this. We're here for you guys. We're here for each other, and we're here for you guys to strengthen this community and raise awareness of Saturn and just to have fun. And that's facebook.com/playSegaSaturn for the Shiro podcast.
So on behalf of all of us at both the Sega Saturn Shiro podcast and the Sega Titan cast, we wish you adieu.
And Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, guys.
So the Sega gentlemen, signing off.